Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention in Boston, where tonight John Kerry will be asked to stand and deliver his acceptance speech of the formal nomination voted last night. It has been an exciting, high-energy week for Democrats who are pumped up to take back the White House. Before the night is out, delegates will hear from an all-star party lineup. They'll hear from Morgan Freeman narrating a Kerry biography. They'll hear from John Kerry's daughters, and finally from the nominee himself. John Kerry is sure to win a swooning applause in this hall tonight. But what really matters is outside this hall and who John Kerry can swing tonight. Swing voters, swing states. That crucial 5-10% of voters who still haven't picked a candidate. The keys, we are told, to winning the White House in 2004. Tonight on Point, live coverage of John Kerry's big night at the Democratic National Convention and the wooing of the swing voter in the race for the presidency. Let's listen first tonight to some sounds from in and around the convention today.
It does not matter that our foremothers and our forefathers all came to this great land in different ships. We all are in the same boat now.
Let's go. Hey, get his badge number.
You hear them talk about the gay agenda. And I'm going to be honest with you now. The fact is, we who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered, we do have an agenda. And here it is. We think we should be able to fight for our country like John Kerry and serve in the military.
That's why the AFL-CIO and 40 million people in union households all over this country support John Kerry.
And we understand that gay bashing and immigrant bashing and union bashing deplete us as a nation and rob us at the end of the day of our ability to make true and lasting change.
229 years ago, just a few miles from here, a shot was fired that was heard round the world, announcing a unique nation was about to be born. Tonight, from this place, a strong voice will be heard round the world, proposing to change our nation's course.
There was Congressman John Lewis of Georgia, human rights protesters and police clashing near the fenced-in protest area just outside the convention today. Congressman Barney Frank of Massachusetts, Secretary-Treasurer of the AFL-CIO Richard Trumka, President of the NAACP Kwesi Mfume, and Senator Carl Levin of Michigan. So, you've been listening tonight and all week. Are you a swing voter? Still a swing voter? What will it take to close the deal for you one way or another? What's kept you undecided? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With me at the Fleet Center tonight in Boston is Jack Beatty, On Point News Analyst. Jack, great to have you. Here we are, last night, big night. John Kerry's got to be feeling the heat. He was in the hall earlier today, testing out the podium, checking out the hall. And tonight, he stands and delivers, he hopes.
Yes, and a platform has really been put down for him by these other speakers. They've sort of told us who he is, and they've set up the issues for him, and they've, muted expectations for his speech by the excellence of theirs. I'm thinking of Obama, I'm thinking of Edwards, I'm thinking especially of Bill Clinton. I heard one wag, David Brooks of the New York Times, said that some of these speakers have described Kerry the way a priest who does not know the deceased describes
mean.
Yeah, let's see. Oh, he played golf. Right. He was...
John Edwards was giving him a big embrace last night.
He was, and I was talking to some people in Tennessee delegation, and they said, you know, we didn't know Kerry. We didn't know the first thing about him. And we really feel like we do now, and that when we go back home, we'll be able to put some flesh on our, you know, description of Kerry. And they felt very confident. They pointed out, too, that Bush has been in Tennessee 5 times recently. a sign that Tennessee, they say, is in play.
Speaking of swings, a state that went against its native son in the last election, against Al Gore, and now George Bush feels the need to go back and go back again.
That's right. That's right.
So some pressure on right there. WBUR reporter Audie Cornish has been on the floor and all around the hall talking with delegates today. Audie, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Tom. Like Jack, I was out on the floor wading through some of the seating areas for the swing state delegations, Florida, Michigan, New Mexico. And there were a couple themes that came up over and over again. One was this issue of bringing the biography and the details of who he is into focus. There's this idea that when they go back to their states and are arguing on behalf of John Kerry, that the people don't quite know him. They sort of have an idea of the story. They're hoping that tonight he'll really bring that to life. Another theme is clarity and decisiveness. More than anything, people in swing states, delegates from swing states, seem to be very conscious of the Republican criticism about Kerry being a flip-flopper or about not him not being clear in his ideas. And so they want to leave tonight with some ammunition to say, look at that, he's got the courage of his convictions.
So there it is, right out on the floor as you go through the delegates. This talk is there. They know that they have to get those swing voters.
Yeah, and they want to be able to prepare. They want to go home and to know that he made a connection tonight that they can build on from this point going to November.
As much excitement as there's been here, they know they've got to move it right out of the hall. Audie Cornish, thanks so much for being with us. So we're talking about swing voters tonight and their impact on an election that everybody says could be very, very close. I'm joined now at the Fleet Center in Boston by Josh Green, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly and a contributing editor at the Washington Monthly. Josh Green, thanks for being with us tonight.
Pleased to be with you.
And we are joined tonight by Ken Rudin, NPR political analyst. Ken, great to have you.
Nice to be here.
So, Josh, you've looked at these swing voters. Take us into this issue. You've been watching the convention all week. We've all been watching the polls throughout this year. We know what the lineup looked like early in the year. What states, of course, there's kind of two pistons moving here. First, it's swing voters, and then it's the states that can be swung. And with our Electoral College process, that makes all the difference. What states are really considered the key hinge swing states right now?
Well, the short answer to that is the same states that were the closest in the 2000 election. I mean, that election provided a snapshot of a nation in really in perfect balance, and it serves as sort of a Rosetta Stone for political analysts this time around. If you look back, it was the states throughout the upper Mississippi. There was Washington State and Oregon, and of course, most famous of all was Florida. A lot of states through the Rust Belt. If you talk to analysts this cycle, one of the most important states, if not the most important state this time around, is Ohio, where both campaigns are spending more money than just about anywhere else.
And they've got to win those because everything is hinging on these few states. And remind us why.
Well, in order to win in the Electoral College, you need to get 270 votes. Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida, all three of those are important swing states that carry an awful lot of votes. I think most people's thinking is that unless you carry all three, you're going to have a really, really difficult time winning the election. So those states also happen to be very hotly contested, and therefore the swing voters within them are a very, very desirable target for strategists in both parties.
Ken Rudin, we're in the middle of the Democrats' convention right now, so it may not be fair to ask. The polls may not be fresh enough to reflect, but are the swing states swinging? Can we see them in motion already? Are they moving to one side or the other of this spectrum?
Well, they are because John Kerry's moving. John Kerry's numbers have been since he basically clinched the Democratic nomination in early March. His numbers have been improving, and they've been improving in the swing states as well. If you look at national polls, you'll still see a 50-50 election, but if you go into the key states, as you were just saying, the Missouris, the Ohios, Florida, Kerry has opened up a slight lead.
A slight lead. Of course, here we have the convention. George Bush has a convention still to come, and a lot of money in the bank to spend against Kerry in this coming month when Kerry begins to come under the limits of government-funded spending. Now, what about the swing voter within those states, Josh Green? What's the profile, or is there a profile?
Very little is known about them except for a general belief that these are the folks, at least at this stage, that are probably going to decide the election. Every poll has the two candidates basically within the margin of error. Both parties have spent tremendous amount of money, time, resources, and effort trying to figure out who these people are. what motivates them and how they can get them out to the polls to vote for their candidate in the next election.
Ken Rudin, what about these voters? No profile? I mean, the Democrats and Republicans must both be desperately trying to figure out who they are, what they want to hear.
Well, we heard in 1992, we heard about soccer moms. We heard about, you know, the sports dads, the coaches, the coach dads. You know what's amazing about it, Josh? They're talking about the 17 or 16 states that all the money is going to go to. But what about the rest of the country that nobody will campaign in? Nobody will spend a dime in Massachusetts or Texas or New York or California, because that's thought to be locked away. And the argument, of course, against the Electoral College is that it only benefits those few states where the vote is thought to be in contention. 1956, Dwight Eisenhower's best state was Vermont. Now Vermont is so Democratic, nobody spends a nickel there.
So if you're not in play, you're just not heard from at all.
Take a look at the ads that are not being shown in Texas and those states that are already determined.
Jack Peedy, I want to hear from you on this in just a moment, but let's go to the podium for just a second where Mark Warner, the governor of Virginia, is speaking.
House in order today, and that will be John Kerry's approach when we take back the White House this year. John Kerry will work for educational opportunity and good jobs. He'll work to give young people in small towns the chance to live and work in the place they grew up. Because you shouldn't have to leave your family or your hometown to get a good job. And to work for true fiscal responsibility and economic opportunity, it will take a president who will work across party lines and regional divisions. John Kerry will bring us together to get the job done. If we can do it in Virginia, we can do it in America, and John Kerry will lead the way. But they're right. It has been a while since Virginia voted for a Democrat for president. Moses wandered in the desert for 40 years. Virginia has been wandering in the Republican desert for 40 years. But let me tell you, this Bush can't lead us to the promised land.
Governor Mark Warner of Virginia, with sort of mom and apple pie and Moses and the non-burning Bush there. Jack Peedy, he's giving a very sort of generic message there, but it's ultimately the swing voters that are being targeted this week. Do you have a picture in mind of this voter?
I do. If you had to say one thing about the swing voters, it's why they're swinging. They are the politically alienated. And I had a good look at them last week in a focus group that Peter Hart did with 12 swing voters in Miamisburg, Ohio. And it was striking. He asked them, what are the issues that matter to you? And they said, well, health care, education, preventing our jobs from going overseas. Then he showed him Kerry in a speech saying, I'm for health care, I'm for protecting our jobs from going overseas, I'm for education. And then he said, turned to the voters and said, well, what do you think? And they said, No. He's just saying that to be elected. Oh, yeah. They're just saying that to be elected. In other words, the swing voters, some of them, are so alienated that political communication is meaningless to them. They simply think this is just a charade. How you reach such a person over the barrier of alienation and cynicism and simply, you're doing this to be elected, if you knew how to do that, you'd be a consultant worth a lot. The strange thing, of course, is that George W. Bush proved that isn't true. George W. Bush has implemented the agenda he ran on, program after program.
Like it or not, and yet some are still swinging. Ken Rudin, I know we've just got you for another minute. What's your sense of this convention, this swing group? Are they being grabbed or not this week?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, we saw in Atlanta in 1988, Michael Dukakis left the convention with a 17-point lead, and, of course, he lost 40 out of 50 states.
And Kerry presumably will not go out of here with anything like a 17-point lead. It's neck and
there
neck.
There are not that many voters up for grabs. That's the feeling right now.
There's just not that. So the swing vote is critical, but it is small. It's a tiny. What I read somewhere today, someone saying, we're all chasing a vote the size of Toledo.
I checked. There are 27 voters who have not declared thus far. That's it. There's 27 voters out there.
Nationally,
upper grabs.
Ken Rudin, thanks for being with
thanks
us.
Thanks for having me.
Ken Rudin is NPR's political analyst. We are live at the Democratic National Convention tonight. John Kerry's big night. He will come on sometime after 9 o'clock tonight. There will be a lot of hoopla. In this hour, we're also looking at swing voters and swing states, the ones that are likely to decide this November election. You can join the conversation tonight. Are you this year's most wanted? Are you a swing voter? Have you been paying attention this week? Are you sold on John Kerry? Ready to be sold? Are you turned off? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, broadcasting live from downtown Boston with the last night of the Democratic National Convention, and we are taking a look tonight at the swing voters and swing states that the Democrats are reaching for this week. You can join our conversation tonight. How is the campaign for swing voters shaping the Democratic Party message? Is it watering down the soup? Is it making centrism God? Is that good or is that bad? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. It is a crowded house tonight. P. Diddy was just walking the hallways here a minute ago with a huge crowd around him. Right now on the floor of the convention, we are hearing from Representative James Clyburn of South Carolina. Let's listen for just a moment.
New jobs here at home. Kerry Edwards will end unfair tax breaks for millionaires and cut 98% of Americans' taxes. I know the compassion and values of John Kerry and John Edwards. John Edwards and I were born and reared in the same neck of the woods, as we call it down in North and South Carolina. I grew up in a home where the recitation of a Bible verse was required every morning at breakfast. I was taught that if you make a dollar, you should save a nickel.
There's James Clyburn at the podium right now, representative from South Carolina. We're talking about swing voters tonight. And one question is, what delegates are going to go out of this hall to tell the swing voters in their states, states that are important to Bush, important to John Kerry? Two delegates joining me right now. Joan Kading from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Joan, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
And Dorothy Bendross-Mendingall from Florida. Let's see, from Miami, Florida. Thank you so much for being with us, Dorothy.
Thank you for having me.
Dorothy, let me turn to you first. How do you see the challenge in Florida? How do you think this convention is going to play with voters down there? Is it turning the key in the lock? Are you going to be able to bring the swing voters over? What are you going to tell them?
Absolutely. I believe the message is so central. I believe the message is clear. It's concise. It's to the point. We will talk about the issues that affect the middle class and the lower working class. We find that any time one American is homeless, hungry, uneducated or undereducated, it's going to affect all of us.
But you could say that was true in 2000, and we know what happened with Florida then. It swung, and it swung decisively.
I think that the message, again, is clear. We are watching now. We sort of slept that one. It's not going to happen again.
Not going to sleep.
We are going door to door. We are visiting churches. We are on the playgrounds. We are at the parks. We are all over the state.
And ready to grab those swing voters. Joan, what about you in Oshkosh, Wisconsin? What's your sense of the swing vote there and what it's waiting to hear?
Well, I think people have changed their mind on the war, for example. So, and we didn't have the war, of course, in the last campaign. So that is an issue that's out there that's big in my area. We have a university system. It's hard to say yet what the turnout will be and what those issues will bring to the younger students, but there's a huge campaign to get the student vote out in our area. The unions have been going door to door in our area. The AFL-CIO has a campaign to get that particular vote out.
And yet you're
targeted.
Still in play. What do you think George Bush's greatest strength in Wisconsin is? Why is it still in play? Why hasn't John Kerry wrapped it up, or why is Bush doing as well as he is?
You mean with the polls?
Yes, with the polls.
Well, I'm not sure that they are accurate at this point, but you know, we do look at them.
And yet you're a swing state for a reason. The reason is people think it could go.
That's right.
Either way, what is it that keeps the Republicans hanging in Wisconsin?
Well, he's been making a lot of visits there. When I left home, he had been there twice He'll be there again very soon when I come back. But Kerry's making a swing through the state, too. It's keeping us busy with these events, you know, and getting people to them. And, of course, people are interested at this point in taking their families to see these candidates that may be president someday. But I'm not sure they've hardened into the issues yet. I think they're at the point where they, too, are still trying to decide. We've had plant closings in our area. Are those jobs issues going to be a huge effect on the campaign? I think they will be in some areas. And I think the health insurance that's looming overhead, the insecurity that job losses in one area might say to another person, that could happen to me. So there is that. The war is looming, the economy. Those things are going to be the issues in our area.
Working all the way to Election Day. Joan and Dorothy from Oshkosh in Miami, delegates at the convention here in Boston this week. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being with us. I want to turn now to, Bill Schneider, senior political analyst for CNN. He is in the Fleet Center with us here in Boston, but the place is locking down for John Kerry's speech tonight, so we've got him on a cell phone from the other side of the building. Bill Schneider, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Terrific having you. Bill, how are you reading the swing vote in the swing states this year? Which way are they swinging as we sit here in Boston tonight?
Well, there's a diminishing swing vote. I'm making a list of everybody who's an undecided voter, and I'm going to call them all personally in the next few weeks because there aren't very many. At the moment, they were tilting to Kerry over the last month or so. The job situation, a lot of apprehension and anxiety over Iraq. But we're picking up some signals just in the last week from the Washington Post ABC News poll and from state polls that some of the Bush advertising, particularly the flip-flop issue, is having some traction. And we're seeing a little bit of a tilt away from Kerry as voters begin to focus on him. Because remember, they don't know much about John Kerry. In fact, we're finding that they know less about him now than they did a few months ago when he won the primaries.
How can that be, Bill?
Because they haven't been paying attention. They're not like me.
They're forgetting what they knew.
Your viewers and listeners.
Right.
So they don't live and breathe politics. So since the primaries really ended at the beginning of March, they've been doing other things.
And what about the convention this week? We know it only reaches, 18 or 20 million people on television, more beyond that. I don't know if that's the networks. You would know better than I. But in the message that you've heard and the images you've seen out of the convention this week, do you see an impact for John Kerry coming or not, Bill?
I do see a potential impact, and I'm expecting to see some bounce because the Democrats, I think, have hit exactly the right theme. I always ask in any election, what is it that the voters want that they're not getting from the incumbent, in this case, President Bush? My answer, I've been saying for months, has been Bush failed to deliver what he promised. He promised to be a uniter, not a divider. But yet, as president, the country is more divided than ever. You know, when he was, let us put it in quotes, elected, Americans thought he was not Newt Gingrich, that he was a fairly moderate Republican, a compassionate conservative. He had no connection to impeachment. And they thought they were electing, really, a different kind of Republican. But it turns out he is a very hardcore conservative. Those are his beliefs and his principles. So Americans, as Al Gore said in his speech, aren't entirely comfortable with what is in the White House right now. And I think Kerry and the Democratic Convention have hit the right message when they're saying, we want to be a party that unites the country. Remember Barack Obama's speech talking about the United States of America.
And John Kerry tonight, what do you think will be the most effective message for him to get at that undecided vote, that swing vote, those swing states, Bill?
He's going to come across as a plausible commander-in-chief. That's the message he has to deliver. I can be your commander-in-chief. I can keep this country safe. I will protect you. I have a military record. My crewmates are here with me. I have a story to tell about strength and decisiveness. And he wants Americans to look at him tonight and come away saying, this guy is a credible alternative as president of the United States for the many voters out there who are unhappy with George Bush but don't know anything about John Kerry.
Bill Schneider on the other side of the Fleet Center with us tonight. Thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure.
Bill Schneider, senior political analyst for CNN. We're talking about swing voters as the convention revs up for John Kerry tonight. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm joined right now by Chuck Todd. He is editor-in-chief of the National Journal's Hotline. Chuck Todd, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So the 50-50 nation notion is very big out there. The notion is going to be a very close race. You have written a few weeks back now, that in fact this could be a runaway race, one way or the other. You were kind of feeling it might be a Kerry runaway. So does that mean that the swing voter issue is not really as in play as everybody is saying? Or how do you get to a runaway scenario here?
Well, there's two ways for the landslide theory. First of all, one thing is you got to remember a 52-47 popular vote is probably going to be 350 electoral votes, and that's a landslide.
Yes,
okay?
Of course.
That's an electoral landslide. We can be a 50-50 nation and have a margin of error of plus or minus 3. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's something to that. But the other part of this is that, look, turnout's going to be way, way up. Every indication shows that it's going to be up. I happen to think it's going to be a lot higher than some people think.
So does that blow away the swing voter issue?
No, it depends on how you define swing voter. I believe a swing voter swings between voting and not voting, not between the two different parties.
Oh, there's a different definition.
One race in particular I've used as an example over the last couple of years that makes it make a lot of sense and involves John Edwards. In 1998, when he ran for his first Senate seat, he won by a very comfortable margin, 4 or 5 points. I think it was 51-47. It was a significant victory, close but significant. Yeah. He knocked off an incumbent. In 2002, in North Carolina, midterm election, same type of election, as Erskine Bowles got more total votes than John Edwards. Yet Erskine Bowles lost by one of the largest margins any Democratic Senate candidate has ever lost in North Carolina.
So where does this take
Elizabeth
us?
Elizabeth Dole. Elizabeth Dole got 300,000 more people to just show up to the polls than Locke Faircloth, who was the incumbent in 1998. What happened was the Republican Party went out and found what they called marginal voters, people that only voted in presidential elections, and they identified them and they got them to, you know, because they knew if they got them to the polls, they were going to vote Republican.
So in this election, if there's a huge turnout, who does that work for?
At this point, it's hard not to see this working for John Kerry. People don't go to the polls because they're happy. People go to the polls because something's bothering them. That's the other part of this, how this whole landslide thing works.
They don't go to stand by their man, to stand by their president, their George Bush.
I'd like to see the election that's happened. When turnout is up, incumbents lose. Doesn't matter. Another example, California recall. Everybody said during the California recall, oh, this is going to be at a time no one knows when the election is. They're not used to stuff like this. More people in California voted in the recall election than they did in the 2002 governor's election. Was there a compelling candidate? Sure. But what was the more compelling reason to turn out? They wanted to get rid of Gray Davis. They were upset, and they came out. And when you're upset, you're more likely to vote than when you're happy. That's why they call it fat and happy, because you're kind of lazy.
And you don't get to the polls, but the Republicans are going to be pushing hard to get their voters to the polls. I want to turn to our callers. A lot are waiting to join this conversation. Raj is calling from Shrewsbury, Massachusetts. Hi, Raj. You're on the air. Hello, Raj. Are you there? Sounds like we may have just lost Raj. Let's turn to another caller. Paul is calling from Concord, Massachusetts. Hi, Paul, are you there?
Yes, I'm there. Hello.
Great. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, great. Yeah, it's for Massachusetts, my vote doesn't count anyway. But
because you assume it's going Democratic, it's going Kerry.
That's right. But on the swing factor, I'm always torn, and this year again, torn between, you know, the two areas of, as let's face it, as a higher taxpayer in my area, I'm constantly the whipping boy of the Democratic Party, and that angers me, frankly.
One of those 200,000 plus guys who's going to have their tax cut rolled back in a Kerry administration?
It's hard to, I mean, I don't know where I fit in that 200,000, but let's say that I'm on the upper end of the true taxpayers that has earned income,
okay,
that's paying,
yep,
as opposed to the unearned. However, on the other end of the spectrum, you know, so that pushes me in the Republican direction. But the other side, what I'm always surprised at is the Democrats do not pick up on certainly my bigger concern, which has to do with erosion of civil rights. And when I look at the Republican agenda year after year, it's you know, whether it's the pro-choice issue, the erosion of the public schools, the rise of the religious Christian right, the, you know, restacking of the Supreme Court, the equal pay issues, all of these things to me, you know, tend to be a fear issue that is not just moving the country, not about moving the country forward, it may actually move the country backward.
So you want to hear the Democrats stand up on that point, and I want to pick that up, Paul, in just a second. We thank you for your call. Before we turn to that, let's hear for just a moment from Massachusetts Congressman Ed Markey at the podium.
Independence on Mideast oil. Let it begin here. for protecting the civil rights of all Americans. Let it begin here. For a country united by hope, not fear, let it begin here. Now is the time. This is the place. You are the people, and Kerry Edwards is the ticket. Let it begin here. Thank you all so, so much.
Representative Ed Markey, congressman from Massachusetts, at the podium. Josh Green, you heard our caller Paul there saying, hey, I don't like constantly being bashed as the bad affluent American by the Democrats, but I'm bothered on a lot of things, including civil liberties, and that I don't hear about. That could swing my vote.
Well, one thing that's notable about this election for Democrats is, one, that you don't hear a lot of Rich bashing. You may hear Bush bashing, you may hear Cheney bashing, you may hear Halliburton bashing, but you don't hear a lot of bashing of the rich. The other thing is that civil rights have been a surprisingly prominent...
Let me ask you one thing. Sure. Two Americas. Is that bashing of the rich or something else? John Edwards last night, two Americas.
I wouldn't consider that bashing of the rich, no.
Just saying he's opposed to policy that has let Americans float apart into different worlds.
Well, you know... You can look at that as coded bashing of the rich, and Republicans will certainly do all they can to encourage people to see it that way. But out-and-out bashing of the rich, I think, is not something you're going to hear very often.
We just have to acknowledge that our caller, Paul, who identifies with the affluent part of the country, says he's felt bashed this week, but he wants to hear tougher stuff on civil liberties.
Well, that actually has been a surprisingly prominent theme this time around, because the Patriot Act is very, very unpopular with a Democratic base. And if you look at the Attorney General, John Ashcroft, he's not, if not the most reviled figure among Democrats, he's probably a close second to George W. Bush. And you heard in the quote right there from Ed Markey, I think the second thing he said there was civil rights. It's been a theme of speeches by Barack Obama and others in this convention. It's certainly possible we'll hear Kerry say something about it this evening.
And yet it doesn't seem to be breaking through for this particular caller with the kind of volume, Chuck Todd, that he would like to hear. Are the Democrats pulling in their claws at this convention to go with the positive theme that John Kerry has encouraged in a way that could actually make them too bland to roll some of those swing voters their way?
You know, I tell you, I'm of two minds on this softball convention that we've seen so far. And I've been sort of talking to a lot of smart people today, and I can't tell you how divided even the punditry class, whatever you want to call them, is on whether the Democrats are too soft on this, or if they've struck the right tone. Obviously, if they don't get a big bounce out of this, or something, you know, they don't hit the right chord, they're going to get back, you know, they're going to beat
all
up
kinds
that they
of Monday
that
morning quarterback.
Right, they didn't do enough. But I'll tell you, pundits get it wrong a lot when it comes to these conventions. They totally missed how Al Gore's speech in 2000 did work and did touch where it is. I've seen some focus groups. And there are some independents out there. They're not independents. They're moderate Republicans. These are people that more likely would vote Republican than Democrat. Mm-hmm. That I bet you this convention speaking a little bit better to than any of us realize. We're here. We're in the midst of this thing with the liberals.
In the bubble.
And it wouldn't surprise me if all of a sudden we saw the Ohios, the Wisconsins, the Iowas. Those are the three states I'm going to be watching to see. Does Kerry go from being tied to up three or four? And that's not a big shift, but it would be a significant shift.
We are live at the Democratic National Convention tonight. John Kerry will make his statement tonight, make his speech accepting the nomination of the party, which came down late last night. No surprises there, but everybody is on their toes waiting for this Kerry speech, waiting to see how he comes across to the nation and in particular to swing voters. Both parties need them. George Bush needs them. John Kerry needs them if he wants to win. What do you think? In a 50-50 nation, what does it mean that so much rides on the fringe of undecided, the swingers, and in such a polarized political environment? What is keeping some people undecided? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are broadcasting live tonight from downtown Boston on the last night of the Democratic National Convention. John Kerry will be on stage, bigger than life, in video and video replay around the hall tonight. You can join our conversation tonight. We're looking this hour at swing voters, very critical factor in this election, we are told by just about everyone who's looking on. How about those swing states, Ohio, Florida, Missouri? Do they really deserve all this attention? And swing voters, what will it take to win your vote? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I am joined right now by two more Democratic delegates attending the convention this week from swing states. By Daniel Gray from Cleveland, Ohio. Thanks for being with us, Daniel.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
And by Dwayne Bensing from Fayetteville, Arkansas, age 20, the youngest in the Arkansas delegation. Dwayne, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
So, Dwayne, first to you. Swing voters in your state, do you think they will have heard what they needed to hear this week to swing them toward John Kerry?
I think Edwards last night had a great speech that will definitely be out there for Arkansans to be able to identify with. We look at him as a southerner in Arkansas, being a southern state. They were looking for a message from him that rang true, and the idea of having hope is definitely something that Arkansans are looking for. The Bush administration is going to have a hard time to show Arkansans what he's done for them because things aren't so hot, and they were a lot better 4 years ago for us.
And Daniel Gray, Cleveland, Ohio. Ohio generally a huge state. Everybody looking at the numbers, looking at history. If you don't win Ohio, very tough to win the White House. What is keeping this Ohio in play this year? What do you think is the dynamic that's keeping it still swinging?
Well, I think even more than in play, it's really seeming like it's kind of moving towards John Kerry a little bit. I think latest numbers don't mean anything necessarily. But, you know, of a lot of the swing states, Ohio's economy is really performing the most as poorly as any of them. And it is the message rings true that John Kerry and a lot of the other people have been saying that, you know, the jobs aren't coming back, the economy isn't picking up, and we need to do something different. So I think that, you know, people are going to be really looking towards John Kerry's speech tonight more than the others that we've heard so far. But I think the message that we need a change in the economy is really going to hit home with Ohio.
So when you go back to Ohio and you are out campaigning and you buttonhole that voter who says, I'm just still not sure, or maybe says, you know, I voted George Bush last time and this time I'm open to something else, what are you going to say to them, Daniel?
Well, especially Republican voters, traditional Republican voters, you know, government hasn't been getting smaller over the past three and a half years. It's been getting bigger. We've been spending more. We have been running up deficits. These are the kinds of issues that, you know, you talk to most traditional Republicans that they say are important issues to them. And this administration has not been doing it for them. And we need to, you know, we need a change. So this is the kind of things that I think can open them up to maybe looking at John Kerry and a Democratic candidate that they probably wouldn't have looked at before. And then it's the message that we've been getting out this week that, you know, that can really start to swing them over into our side.
And Dwayne, let me ask you, you're saying John Edwards, southerner, plays well in Arkansas, but the big man tonight, the big speech tonight is John Kerry, definitely not a southerner, very much a New Englander. How do you think that's going to play, and is that a problem for Arkansans?
I don't think it'll be so much a problem. It just depends on how well John Kerry performs his speech tonight. I think if he has the right message in there, if it gives that idea of hope to Arkansans, we're looking for something new, definitely looking for something new. Our economy, just like Ohio, we're all struggling, and there's several issues out there that need to be addressed tonight. And I think John Kerry knows that. He's going to be able to give an optimistic message, and that'll be enough to get Arkansas on the map for him.
Delegates Dwayne Bensing from Fayetteville, Arkansas, and Daniel Gray from Cleveland, Ohio, thanks a lot for stopping by.
Thanks for having us.
Great to have you. Let's turn to our callers. Jim is calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Just great, thanks.
I'm what you would consider a typical Republican voter. I own a small business, and I have voted Republican the past few elections.
Okay.
But I'm very much in swing right now because it's all about the economy. And that's what drove the first Bush out of presidency, and from North Carolina's point of view, the economy really hasn't caught on fire. And after all these factory closings around the area, none of those jobs have ever come back. And the biggest thing happening in Raleigh is like Walmart opening.
Walmart opening. So Jim, let me ask you then: Have you been listening and watching this week? And have you liked what you've seen and heard?
I've been watching everything. There's some issues that I'm still kind of leery about, but I really like the fact that the Democratic Party is trying to come more to the center. I think it served Clinton well during his administration, and I'm hoping that Kerry has a good plan for the economy, and if he can swing me the right way, he's going to get my vote.
So you like that move to the center, and it's all about the economy for you in Raleigh. Jim, thanks very much for calling. Chuck Todd, here's the economy moving a voter who's voted Republican, and he is now open.
Well, they just missed getting his vote, I think. That should have been John Edwards' job last night.
I reread Edwards' speech this morning.
Yeah.
Saw it last night. I can't get this one line out of my head, this "we will destroy them," because it just didn't make sense for John Edwards to say it. I don't understand why they had John Edwards become the military national security message as well as this "to America's" message, where they sort of mixed their messages. There would have been a better chance to get that caller had they had Edwards be domestic guy and let John Kerry get out there and say, "we will destroy them."
Well,
and be the macho, little testosterone, but more importantly, commander-in-chief, because it would have sold better. I'm wondering if they dropped a little bit of the ball, a little bit.
The Edwards people were unhappy with that line.
I've been hearing through the grapevine.
He didn't want to say it. He didn't want to say it.
You could tell he didn't like the line. And then I've heard back channels that, you know, they didn't like how much that speech got tinkered with. He's not pleased that it's not his best performance. And it wasn't. When did he get rolling? When he was "to America," and when he started doing the rhetorical stuff, "hope is on the way." Because why? That was John Edwards.
We know that is John Edwards' natural approach. On the other hand, Jack, our caller from North Carolina, is saying, look, I like this move toward the center. Part of being in the center in the midst of this war in Iraq is being very tough. And maybe the man who's a heartbeat from the presidency needs to show a little bit of that, too.
Yes, but I do agree with Chuck that was a false note. And it was the verbal equivalent almost of Dukakis in the tank in 1988. It just isn't the way this man has talked in the primaries, and it was not his idiom. And when he talks to, as we were saying, when he debates Dick Cheney, Dick Cheney is going to be, if he's going to compete on "we will destroy you," he's talking to Darth Vader there. That's not the ground he wants to compete on. He wants to compete on compassion, on giving everybody the same opportunities he had, on giving that other America a bigger stake in America.
Well, you may be right, but I might have heard it another way. I heard a lot of that "to America's" and the open arms last night, a sprinkle of the "we will destroy them." Let's hear just a little bit of what all the delegates here are hearing right now. It's Mavis Staples behind me with "America the Beautiful" on the convention floor.
Oh, for spacious skies, for amber ways of grain, for purple mountains, majesty above the fruited plain. America.
Mavis Staples on the floor. Susan on the phone from Windale, North Carolina. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've been listening all week to the program.
Great to have you.
I'm a transplant from Pennsylvania. I have not missed a primary or a presidential election since I turned 18 quite some time ago.
Okay.
And
what about this year, Susan? How are you leaning?
I am undecided. I am a registered Republican. I was in Pennsylvania when both Senator John Hines was in office and Tom Ridge was in office.
Okay.
Senator Hines made a donation to the American Diabetes Association, and I've been a type 1 diabetic since 1967. I am very much interested in stem cell research, and I am very upset at the first President Bush that as one of his last days in office banned the research, and now this president has done it.
So did you hear Ron Reagan the other night speaking at the convention?
You bet I did. And I'm there with him. I'm in the healthcare industry. I'm a healthcare professional. And I really believe that this technology will save the baby boomer generation tons of money in unnecessary medical bills.
And it might just be the thing that hits you with your diabetes right on the bullseye and brings you over. Susan, thanks for your call. Josh Green, Susan raises a couple issues related, but one is on the science and the research front around stem cells. Maybe the larger issue there, the moralism that has come, not morality exactly, but moralism that's come to partly define the Bush administration, in this case maybe working against him.
I think so, and I think one of the reasons that Ron Reagan was featured so prominently at a Democratic campaign was it seemed to Democratic strategists that this was one area where they could potentially peel off Republican voters, and Susan certainly sounded like one of those voters who is open to being swayed to the Kerry camp.
Well, a lot of swaying out there among those who can be swayed, who are open to being swayed. Everyone will be watching the poll numbers, of course, the end of this week to see how the convention has played out and watching very closely right on through the remainder of this campaign. Josh Green, I want to thank you for being with us tonight. It's been great having you.
Pleasure to be with you.
Josh Green with the Atlantic Monthly and Chuck Todd, editor-in-chief of the National Journal's Hotline. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Let's turn back to the convention floor now. Jack Beatty, stick with us. On the floor, Senator Joseph Biden is speaking.
Make America safer and win the death struggle between freedom and radical fundamentalism. This struggle reached our shores on September 11, 2001, and delivered this generation of Americans to this moment of awesome destiny. After 9/11, I believed, and I still do, that if we exercise the full measure of our power, including our ideas as well as our ideals, we could unite not only this nation, but the world in a common cause. 9/11 was a moment of profound pain, but also of enormous opportunity. Americans stood in bloodlines for hours, even though they knew no more blood was needed. The French ran a headline, "We are all Americans now." Imagine if Franklin Roosevelt or John Kennedy had been president and how they would have seized that moment. Imagine if this president had spoken to the nation and the world and summoned that sense of solidarity. Imagine if he had said, "It is time for all who are able to do something for America. I'm calling for a new program of national service and an energy policy that will liberate us from the suffocating grip of the Middle East. And imagine if he said, I call on our allies to join us in a compact for freedom, because we are always stronger, safer, better, more secure together than we are alone." Just imagine had he said that. I do not question the motives of this administration, but I profoundly disagree with their judgments. And I believe history will judge this generation well, and this administration harshly, for the mistakes it has made. I believe this generation will look and wonder why this administration has squandered the opportunities that were before it. Today, we are rightly content in the example of our power, but we have forgotten the power of our example. And for all of America's great might, we are more alone in the world than ever before. As a result, we are less secure than we could or we should be. Our allies and our friends, the international organizations we've built over the past half century, they do not hold us down. They help us share the burden of leadership. And we were told by this administration we would pay no price for going it alone. But that is obviously wrong. Because we waged a war in Iraq.
I'm Tom Ashbrook at the Democratic National Convention. We are listening to Senator Joe Biden. This is On Point.
Virtually alone. And the price is clear. Nearly 90% of the troops and